Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekdays at 9 and 11 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning, I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, how your garden is growing with such a late start. The trees are finally greening. I'm starting to see some crocuses popping up, but I feel like we have been cheated of at least 3 weeks of spring. So how do you make up for lost time? And when can we actually start digging in our gardens again? As Julie Weisenhorn joins us, we want to hear from you. What's your first gardening priority now that the snow has melted and spring is here? And I'm interested in what your most ambitious gardening project is this spring, given, again, the cold weather so late in the year. Have you set aside those most ambitious projects, or are you determined to dive in? Talk to me about that this morning, 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, on Twitter, at CarrieNPR. Julie Weisenhorn is a horticulturalist and extension educator at the U of M. You know, we were going to have you in, I think it was like the beginning of April, and here it is the beginning of May, and is my whining legit that we've lost 3 weeks of spring?
I think we're always anxious for spring. And if you'd had me in early April, we probably would have been talking about shoveling snow at that point.
Yeah.
So it's good that we waited.
And gardens. You know what? I've got some grass mold from snow laying
mold
on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what do I do about it? Might as well just ask you that and get it out of the way.
Yeah. Snow mold is pretty prevalent this year. And it is a mold that grows on the grass. And it's basically due to humidity.
Okay.
So heavy snow over the winter. And that causes a lot of it. It lays down. Sometimes your grass is longer going into the fall, so it holds in that humidity. And the thing to do is really quite simple. It's actually gently rake up those grass plants and get some air and light to those blades,
okay.
And that will help take care of that
really,
mold.
It's that easy?
It's that
just
easy.
Just open it up.
Mm-hmm. It's
okay.
More cosmetic than anything, and it's not going to kill the grass. I think people who are sensitive to mold should wear some kind of a bandana over their nose and mouth or some kind of a dust mask, just because those spores get in the air. And I know that folks can be sensitive to that.
Okay. Question on Twitter here from Felipe, who says, what are some fun, low maintenance flower or spice garden ideas for a college student in an apartment?
Wow.
Good question.
Great question. And that would apply for anybody who lives in a townhome or lives in a condo. I think I would start with some of your favorite things to cook with. If you, Felipe, are a cook and there's certain dishes that you like, I would seek out those herbs. And there's so many different garden centers, local, the big ones, the small ones, who carry a lot of different kinds of herbs. You can also order them if you want online.
Are you saying herbs will mostly thrive even in a small area?
Exactly.
You don't have to worry about
exactly.
that.
Exactly. Okay. Yeah, they're really well adjusted to containers. And for somebody living in an apartment, you can also put a grow light over them if you want to add a little bit of extra light. If you have a westerly window or southern window, that's great, too. So they're pretty easy to grow.
Flowers, he wants
flowers,
to know.
Flowers, I would look at some flowers that are simple. They require a little bit more light for blooming. So maybe try some nasturtiums. Those are pretty easy and straightforward to grow. Zinnias too, but remember they need more light, so you definitely want to have a pretty bright window.
I love zinnias.
I do too.
The colors that they come in.
I do too, and the shapes,
yeah.
The different shapes and sizes are really amazing.
Here's somebody answering Felipe on Twitter,
oh,
who
great.
Says basil is almost impossible to mess up and it will make your apartment smell glorious. Is basil pretty resilient?
It's pretty resilient, and there's so many different kinds.
Okay.
Thai basil, lemon basil,
lots of different
good
ways to
Genovese
use it.
Genovese basil. Yeah.
Good. Okay, phone call here from Nikki in Minneapolis. Hey, Nikki, hi.
Hi.
What do you want to know?
I want to know if pollinator-friendly means anything with regard to folks who offer to come and spray a tree, for example, for Japanese beetles.
Good.
I have a butterfly garden and want to do things in a pollinator-friendly way, but often I live in a neighborhood, and I hear from my neighbors, oh, well, we had this tree sprayed, but it was, the folks say it was pollinator friendly.
Okay,
does
good.
Does that actually mean anything?
Good question.
That is a really good question. Pollinator friendly, the important thing is to understand what was sprayed. That will tell you right away whether it was pollinator friendly or not by the chemical that was used. If they sprayed, the timing of spray is important too. So Japanese beetles come out in August. If it was a tree that was a blooming tree, then it would have bloomed probably earlier in the year. But again, it depends on the tree. It depends also on what they were actually spraying. And that's the way to tell whether it's pollinator friendly, quote unquote.
So, Nikki, this would be you go back and ask the
right,
company some
right.
additional questions. Does that make sense?
So the folks should ask, what does that mean and what
good.
Chemical are you using?
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay,
thank
good.
Thank you very much.
Good advice. Hey, what kind of shape is our soil in? Because
oh, good
I was thinking, oh, it's warm. Mm-hmm. It's going to be warm this weekend. Maybe I'll get out there and start digging around.
I think
too
now
soon?
You can, and it depends on your yard. If you're in a shadier spot, it might be a little wet right now. If you're walking on your lawn and it's pretty spongy, and kind of squishy, you want to just wait to
okay.
do any kind of raking. But if your garden beds have warmed up, and I think a lot of them have, the ones on campus that we've been prowling around, those are getting there now. We're thinking about tilling and turning soil over for the upcoming growing season. So I think a lot of cases, our garden soil is probably doing pretty well,
even
unless it's
deeper,
pretty shady.
Even deeper in.
Even I deeper
mean, okay.
in, yeah. Especially if you have raised beds at all or any kind of a tiered landscape at all. The best thing to do is dig down and then to actually put your hand down there and feel it. And if it's really cold and icy, you could probably wait at that point.
Julie Weisenhorn's in the studio here. If you've just gotten in on the show, every now and then we ask her to come in and talk about gardening. We had to wait for a month beyond where we thought we were going to do this show. But here she is, taking your calls and your questions, 651-227-6000. Hey, the other thing I'm asking you to tell Julie and me about today is what your most ambitious gardening project is this
That's
spring.
That's the fun part.
I know. I really want to hear. You've been wanting to do this for a while. The late spring, the late snow didn't put you off. What are you digging into now, that ambitious gardening project? 800-242-2828, 651-227-6000, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR to Vicki in Chandler. Hi, Vicki. What do you want to know?
Oh, I was just wondering. I try to not use preem on my garden, you know, to hold the
sure.
weeds down. And somebody suggested shredded paper.
Okay, so yeah, so they're actually, you're creating a barrier, a light barrier to the weed seeds. And a lot of our weed seeds, especially annual weed seeds, are germinated by sunlight. And so if you cover them up, that certainly prevents them from germinating. But I wouldn't use shredded paper. I would probably use sheets of paper initially, newspaper. And it will break down over time. You could put mulch over that paper. That would help also.
What about that gardening material? How do you feel about that?
Yeah, I think it's okay. I don't think it looks so great.
Yeah.
But landscape fabric is another, or weed barrier it's sometimes called, is another option too. It's something you can reuse from year to year. You can take it up and clean it off and lay it back down the next year, or just leave it down all winter.
Vicki, how does your garden look these days? Are you getting out there soon?
Not. It's pretty wet yet.
Yeah.
So.
You want to wait then.
I'm a vegetable gardener. So.
Sure.
Okay. From a listener on Twitter, bunnies, the bane of my existence. They eat everything, including things
mm-hmm.
that people swear bunnies
oh, yes.
never touch. We have tons of rabbits in our backyard, too. And I like to watch them, so I don't care what they're eating.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do to fend them off from certain gardening beds or plants?
Well, fencing is really great.
is that really the
fencing
only option?
Fencing is a great option. Also, removing anything that provides habitat. So if you've been throwing all your brush over in the corner of your yard, you're creating a bunny condo at that point. So you want to remove that brush, get it to the compost site, get rid of it, clean that area up. If you've got spaces under your decking, you might put some kind of screening under there to prevent them from taking up residence underneath the deck.
Yeah, we've got a condo going on under our deck, but I'm happy about that.
Well, that's right.
Wonderful. I guess if they come in and they eat all my flowers or whatever, they're entertaining. To Kathleen in St. Louis Park. Hi, Kathleen. Your question for Julie.
Hi, Julie.
Hi.
Yes, I am
hosting a hive of bees
okay.
for a friend, and there's not much blooming in the yard yet. And I wanted to know, what should I be doing to ensure the bees are thriving? Is there anything I need to put in that will bloom in the short term? Or
So what are they going to eat before the flowers
what
come
about,
out?
What about trees?
Crab apples
or plums?
I do have a crab apple in the front yard. So it's probably, 200 feet away from
That's fine.
The hive.
Yeah,
okay.
That's good.
What about water?
Water, I think with honeybees, I'm surprised the person who you're hosting the hive for didn't give you some instruction on that. But I believe honeybees need some water. Our bee squad, actually at bees.umn.belab.umn.edu, that website would probably give you some information about what to put out for honeybees. But look for any flowering trees. Bees will forage quite a distance, a couple of miles from their hive.
Okay,
and the important thing is I think what's going to be blooming in a couple of weeks, and then look around your neighborhood, because if there's crabs and plums and forsythia, they're all going to be hunting those down.
Excellent.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Yeah, good question.
So here's Leah. I was asking about ambitious gardening projects.
Yeah.
She says, I got really excited about spring, and I planted cool weather vegetable seeds in my raised bed last weekend. Think I'll regret planting the seeds too early?
Not a bit. Not a bit. If your bed was dry enough and it wasn't sopping wet and frozen, I think you did a good job. I've been thinking I'm a little late in planting my radishes already, but you did. That's great. You're going to have a nice crop.
We like your ambition. To Lisa in St. Paul. Hi, Lisa. You sound like
Hello.
You've got an ambitious project. What's going on?
Yes, I have. So the front of our house, we have a hill that's really hard to mow, and then we have two retaining walls, and the material on the retaining walls doesn't match. So I'm trying to do something that incorporates the hill and then also kind of hides the retaining walls.
Right.
So I'm looking for ideas on plants that climb or cascade, but that are also really low maintenance.
I need this too.
What's in the hill? What's on the hill right now?
It's grass.
Okay.
But we've got to get rid of the grass.
Yeah, good. That's a really good idea, because those slopes can not only be difficult, but kind of treacherous to mow and maintain. You could look at some low growing or taller too, ornamental grasses. You could also look to some of our pollinator friendly plants like echinacea. There's also, Monarda, and you could plant a pretty nice swath of some masses of those plants on those hillsides, and that would hide your retaining wall.
Would you mix the Monarda, which is bee balm, isn't it?
Correct.
In with some of the ornamental grass? I mean, could she do a combination of what you've suggested?
You could do a combination, but you want to keep the Monarda in masses of 6 to 10 plants at least, so that the bees are getting a full, if you plant one here and one there, they like to take care of one plant at one time. So forage on that one plant. So planting masses of a pollinator friendly plant is a good piece of advice.
So Lisa, are you going to pull up the grass or till it up and then do a hole?
I think the plan is probably to till it and then plant hopefully things that can kind of take over in place of it. And I'm also really curious what I can do to cascade down the lower retaining wall, because it's not really a finished wall.
Right. Okay.
And I'd like to kind of hide it. Are there any good options of cascading plants?
Well, any kind of plant that's kind of a ground cover would be great. I like sedum myself. It's easy, to grow. It's full sun. It does well around things like cement and rock and block and all sorts
awesome.
Of things. And it will cascade over and create masses that cascade down that area. So that would be pretty
perfect.
Cool. Yeah.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks for the good question.
Excellent.
I didn't know that about Monarda. I've made this error of just planting one or two plants together.
Right.
So good to have your advice on that.
Yeah. Well, basically, if you think about Monarda, it has quite a nice fragrance. And that floral plume is what attracts the pollinating insects.
Okay.
It's one of the things that attracts it.
Hey, and a question about ornamental grasses. How do you contain them? They get weedy sometimes, and they're not very pretty if you just let them spread out. So what do you do?
Well, you choose the right type of a clumping grass.
Okay.
That's great. Feather reed grass has been one of the all-time popular ones out
there.
It's
called feather reed?
Feather reed.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Carl Forster is one of the cultivars. That's a 1999, which seems like a really long time ago, perennial of the year. And it's a lot of people might think it's overused, but I'll tell you what, it's a pretty good rule of thumb kind of grass around here. And when you cut it down, it's a cool season grass, which is another benefit, is that it starts to green up early in the season.
Oh.
And so now would be the time or earlier to have cut it down, you know, a couple of inches, 5 inches or so. And then that's the time to look for weeds in it.
Okay.
If you've got dandelions in it, if you've got other plants that have invaded that plant a little bit.
This is my job this weekend.
Yeah. And if it's hollow in the center of the clump, it's a good time to divide it.
Okay. To Debbie in St. Paul. Hi, Debbie.
Hi.
Question
there.
For Julie.
We live for gardening over here. Both
okay.
My husband and myself.
Yay.
And we are organic gardeners. And yes, I'm calling about Japanese beetles. Because we have, I know you could talk for hours on that, right?
JB.
We have a birch tree, and I swear our entire neighborhood, they just come to our birch tree.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually on the U of M Extension website, which gives a lot of information, but I'm always nervous when I see things that say low toxicity. You know, it's like, what would you recommend? And we have no lawn at all, by the way. It's all perennial garden.
Oh, and that's great.
We have a boulevard
wow.
vegetable garden. So
that's great.
Help.
Yeah. The problem with Japanese beetles is they're big and they're strong and they fly a distance. So even if you have one misconception is that I have lawn, so I must have Japanese beetles because the grubs like my lawn. That's a misconception. Grubs are, when you have grub trouble in your lawn, it's obvious. You can pull up dead grass in big sheets. So treating your lawn, you don't have a lawn, but for those of you who do who think, I'm just going to treat my lawn and that'll make sure I don't have any Japanese beetles, that's wrong. Those Japanese beetles will travel from distances, and they like about 350 different common garden plants that
wow.
we have in trees.
Oh.
So they're a real problem. The important thing is if it's on a tree, the hard part is you can't get up there and actually pick off those beetles. You could try blasting them with water. That might work. But then they're just going to basically fall to the ground
and
fly off somewhere else.
Yeah. So what do you do?
Well, a lot of times because it's very cosmetic on a plant. We think it's a horrible thing. We think that it's really going to kill the plant. And to be honest, it's primarily cosmetic. And so it's a matter of just tolerating them.
But so you mean when you say it's cosmetic, we don't like the looks of these
correct.
Beetles hanging around, but they're
yeah.
probably not doing that much damage?
Exactly.
Oh.
Exactly. And weather has, you know, there's a theory about that weather has, maybe this late winter has killed off some of the grubs that would emerge as the adults this summer. We don't really know that. There's still a lot of research to be done. But a lot of times our Japanese beetle damage is cosmetic. And so it's something that we unfortunately have to tolerate. If you talk to people from the East Coast, they say, oh, geez, we've had them forever. You know, we just live with them. And it's tough. There aren't a lot of really good answers, but especially with trees, smaller plants, you can actually hand pick those off and drop them in some soapy water and as a homeowner.
On Twitter, a listener says, biggest project this year is reclaiming my perennial garden from the quack grass. Oh, my gosh. Good luck.
Boy.
I have to do that, too. Oof. Going to dig up the remaining plants, blow it up, and start over with new dirt and a barrier between the neighbor's yard where the infestation came from. Wish I had a flamethrower. I love it. And another question on Twitter. I have a 5-year-old apple tree. I want to have cherry and plum branches grafted onto it. Went really?
No, you can't do that.
When is the best time
yeah,
to do this?
You can't do that because
this is a serious question.
They're different genus.
Yeah,
cherries and plums are Prunus, and apples are Malus, and they're not going to.
Does that mean you could graft a cherry branch onto a plum tree and it would grow?
I don't know about that. You can graft different apple branches onto apple trees. So you
okay.
might have a Honeycrisp, and you graft on a Zestar branch. You can do that.
Mm.
It takes quite a bit of skill to do that successfully and patience, but you cannot graft a cherry and a plum to an apple successfully.
A call here from Chrissy in North Minneapolis. Hey, Chrissy, hi.
Hi, Cal. Oh, gosh, you're so fabulous. Thank you.
what's your question here?
I listen to you all the time, and I'll tell you one thing. My neighbors do, too, and you always bring great information. And what I tried to do... I grow my tomatoes and peppers and stuff in container plants.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And how it works is because, well, I try to make sure there's no weeds.
Sure.
You know, you can control that. But the one thing is always, you know, the weather does, you know, do its thing. It's Minnesota. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But with, like, growing herbs and stuff, I do that too. And, yeah, if you have enough good light, it works. But if you don't, you have to actually know what the herbs want to do, or, like, your tomato plants and pepper plants, any plant.
Good point.
Right.
You have to have the knowledge of, okay, if you're going to do it, because I do everything from seed.
Okay.
Oh,
and,
wow.
Yeah. And my neighbor, but I'm like, it's the best way to do it.
Your phone's cutting out here, but you've raised a really good question, which is, if you're going to grow something like peppers or tomatoes from seeds, do you have to have started, I don't know, weeks ago?
Yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh.
They're about an 8-week time period.
Wow.
We started peppers for a study that we're doing back on March 27th, and they're now... We've transplanted them one time into about 5-inch pots, and they're happy and styling in the greenhouse right now.
But if you were to go out into your garden today to plant seeds, you're probably not going to have
right.
vegetables by
probably not
in the
and,
season.
And
okay.
also peppers and tomatoes and eggplant are all warm season crops, and right now it's too cold to plant those outside. So you would wait. You'd have to wait even longer now to plant those seeds.
Good.
And so, yes, you want to start those plants early on in your indoors. Best thing now would be to go to your local garden center and talk with the folks there about some disease-resistant varieties. That would
Got
be
it.
A good option.
Hey, Julie Weisenhorn is in the studio. She's talking about gardening at long last. And one of the things we want to know from you is what your most ambitious gardening project is. Did it get put off because spring has been so late, or are you determined to dig in? I'm loving hearing what you've got going. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. If you get a busy signal on the lines, call us back. And then on Twitter, it's at CarrieNPR. Question here from Karen, who says, we have an infestation of burdock and thistle under our large pine trees.
Whew.
We're afraid to spray the weeds for fear of killing the pine trees.
Sure.
We've tried digging them out, but they just keep coming back. Any ideas to control or get rid of these?
Huh. Well, I think one of the things to look at is targeting the plants themselves and versus, you know, broadcasting a spray over all of the plants under the tree, because you're right, it could potentially harm your tree or other plants that maybe are plants you want to keep under there. You might have some other shade plants. But I think with thistle and burdock, the hardest part about those is that they have these long tap roots.
Oh.
And so any little bit of that root that's left behind after trying to dig it out or pull it out is going to create a new plant. And
wow.
so the best thing is keep pulling them. Maybe take a little bit of an herbicide, a broadleaf herbicide, and touch the leaves, paint it on. Use one of those disposable paint brushes or sponge things.
But don't spray
it. But don't spray
it.
Just target those plants individually. Get to the biggest ones. Make sure they don't bloom. Cut off any flowers or blooms that you see, seed heads. And just you're going to have to just keep at it. That's the hard part. And you're digging around and you've got tree roots to consider, too. So,
call from Barbara in Delano. Hi, Barbara. Sounds like you've got a cool project going.
Well, I don't know if it's cool, but something that's plagued me for a while.
Oh, what? What is it?
I just finished 10 years of graduate school. And
oh, congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very excited about that.
That's great.
So is my garden. I have a dry creek that runs across the back of my property.
Sure.
So it's about 100 feet, 80 feet by 6 feet wide, and it's become infested with quackgrass and
oh, yeah.
other stuff.
Oh, okay.
And it was originally laid down with, fabric and mm-hmm. and stones.
Right.
And I've tried Roundup, which worked pretty well many years ago before we knew how bad it was. And then I've been trying the various vinegar salt combinations that really haven't worked very well at all for me. I don't know whether it's too wet back there, whether the roots are too well established. But anyway, any ideas?
Well, you could try actually a flamethrower. You could try. I mean, I'm serious. You could try welder's torch. You could, you could try other, you know, any kind of fire. You could try burning those because that quack grass, if I'm thinking correctly about its form, it has roots that spread on the surface. And so because you're going into rock, that's the hard part. Possibly your landscape fabric has deteriorated, you know, or got some holes in it. Maybe animals have dug in it. And so that grass is coming up there. If you can find those areas where it's the worst, you might find the mother plant, so to speak. But you could try actually burning those roots and see if you can take care of it that way. Otherwise, there are other herbicide combinations that you could look into for quack grass aside from the glyphosate, the Roundup ingredient. It's tough. And I wish Sam was here because he would be able to tell you probably more about the physiology of quack grass than I can.
Barbara, are you going to plant some things in the dry creek bed? That's what I thought could be neat about the project.
I'm at the bottom of the hill.
Okay.
And all my neighbors need the drainage, and I need the drainage. And there's no way to mow there in the spring.
Yeah,
everything is dry enough to plant now at my house except for the dry creek. And my neighbors have mud upstream from me because the grasses are blocking the drainage. So it's, you know, it's aesthetic, but it's also practical for neighborly friendliness.
Thanks for the call.
Yeah.
That's a good one. Okay, Elizabeth in New Brighton wants to know, I want to plant an apple tree in my backyard. What should I know about that? Do I need to plant more than one? Can I plant a crab apple and an apple tree together?
You can.
There's like four questions there.
Yes, you can. Yeah, so you can plant. You want to have two different varieties of apples. So you could have your eating apple and a crab apple. You could have two eating apples, but you want them to be different because they're actually going to cross-pollinate. The second thing you want to do is ensure that you have good pollinator habitat in the rest of your yard, flowers for pollinators, habitat for them to nest. And we have a lot of information on that on our extension site. And I've been doing a study on annual flowers. We do studies on other perennials and, you know, both non-native and native. So there's lots of options.
Is there a particular species or kind of variety of apple tree that you would recommend if you're going into this the first time?
Sure. It would depend on what you like in apples. If you like smaller apples, you could try a chestnut crab. A lot of our production apples sometimes get a little big for kids' lunches, for example. Honeycrisp is very popular. Zestar, we have some newer kinds, like the Zestar is one of our newer apples. Very good.
Eating apple.
We have some old favorites, Regents and Wealthies, and that's a really old one. But we have a lot of great apple trees that are available that were bred by the U of M. And we have a great publication on that as well that talks about different varieties and when they bloom and when what they're good for. Some are better for cooking. Some are better for fresh eating. And I would take a look at that also on our Extension garden site at extension.umn.edu. Click on the garden tab, go to yard and garden, and go to the fruit section. You'll find a ton of good information on varieties as well as care and maintenance of your apple tree. That's really important. The pest management can be a little overwhelming, so you can kind of dice it down by reading those publications.
Your questions about planting and gardening and your calls about your most ambitious gardening project of the year. Julie Weisenhorn with us from the U of M. And a question here from Kimber, who says, I want to grow blueberries. What do I have to do to prepare the soil? I know I have to have two plants. How far or near apart do I have to plant them? Will a raised garden help?
We could have a whole show on fruit gardening.
That's a good idea.
Yeah,
let's do that.
It would be great.
Okay.
Bring some friends along on that one.
All right.
Well, blueberries have to cross-pollinate. You are correct. You need two different varieties. I'd recommend some of the university varieties, which are bred specifically for our climate. They're things like North Sky, Northland, Chippewa, St. Cloud, I believe. Again, great list of those on our extension site. And they should be planted fairly close together. One single blueberry is, you know, not terribly thrilling, but if you start to put them together, you start to get some good fall foliage as well as the spring bloom. And then it's easier also for the pollinators to carry the pollen back and forth between the plants. So that's one thing. The trick with blueberries, and it's difficult for us in central and southern Minnesota because we have a limestone bedrock, which makes our soil a higher pH, is that blueberries require a low pH soil of, about 5.5. Ours here is roughly going to be closer to 7.5 to 8, even higher in some cases. And so it requires amending the soil, having a soil test done so that you get a scientific result of your pH of your soil, and then amending it accordingly using elemental sulfur or some fertilizers that are specific for acid-loving plants.
What do you think about the question about the raised bed?
Raised bed would be great because you could actually manipulate the soil that you put into that raised bed. So you could fill, one advice is to grow blueberry plants like annuals and grow them in containers.
Oh, I love that idea.
And 100% of peat. And peat is very acidic.
Excellent.
So it addresses the pH issue right there. The problem is people think, well, I want to keep it from year to year. You can do that. You could, if you have a heated garage, you could overwinter it there. You could try overwintering it outside by sinking it down into the ground just for the winter and then bringing the pot up later. So a raised bed is great because you can actually manipulate that. And you could mix in lots of kinds of blueberries there as well as maybe some other acid-loving plants like azaleas.
Let me take a call here from Christine in Minneapolis. Hey, Christine, appreciate you waiting. What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So my question is that I have about a 100-foot border that's maybe 2 feet wide that goes along our driveway and up against a retaining wall that we put in a couple years ago. And I'd love to put in a short border planting that's like in mats along the whole thing. But the difficulty is that it ranges from dry shade under a giant silver maple to full sun.
Sure.
And I was curious if there's a plant that could take all of it.
Probably not, especially when you get to the really deeper shade closer. And those silver maples have some big roots, as you no doubt know. And so it makes it difficult sometimes to plant in smaller, narrower spaces around those roots. But you could get pretty close. I'm going to go back to sedum because it's a drought-tolerant grass or drought-tolerant plant. Mm-hmm. And I would also look at some shorter grasses like a prairie drop seed or blue oats grama. They are smaller grasses. They're clumping grasses. They would make a very nice border along a retaining wall, and they would tolerate that dry condition.
Julie, what's
in the shade?
Not so much in the shade. Not so much in the shade. That you might have to look at maybe a sedge. You could grow a sedge in there, though they prefer a kind of a damper condition. So, the shade, good old hosta, they are mighty tough. You could certainly transition into that by integrating some of them together.
Sure. Awesome, thank you.
Julie, what's the variety of the sedum? I think I have it. It's Autumn Joy. And it turns pink and it's beautiful.
It's a great structural plant for winter, too.
So, Christine, you might think about that as a variety if you're going to use sedum. To Kay in Lakeville. Hi, Kay.
Hello.
Hello.
Question for Julie.
We have a community garden at our church. And so there's probably 20 big plots.
Okay.
And we've always just tossed our garden waste onto a heap.
Okay.
And we would like to compost.
Sure.
And my question is, first of all, can we throw our weeds in there? And secondly, we don't have much brown. You know, they're supposed to be the green and the brown.
Right.
And we're trying to think how we could find leaves for it. And do you put those leaves in all summer or do you just throw them all in there in the fall? And I'll just take your ideas.
Okay. Well, if you were going to create some structures, that would be, especially with 20 large plots, you might want to put a compost structure. And it could be something simple like hardware cloth and stakes in a big circle. And or it could just be an open mound like you've been doing. The important thing with compost is to turn it, and that will help to break it down. It'll add air to it as well as get some light going to heat it up. The problem with compost piles in most cases, particularly backyard, is they don't heat up enough to kill weed seeds. they have to get quite hot. The compost in some of the municipalities you'll see smoking or steaming, actually, in the winter because they're heating up so much in there. They hold so much heat as they decompose. So with weeds, if you have a weedy plant that has a lot of seeds in it, I would not put it in the compost. I would probably dispose of it in either a separate compost. Maybe you have a weed compost bin for people's weeds and just to keep them out of that. I think also with the compost is you want to have that green to brown ratio. It's the nitrogen carbon ratio. And that would be about three parts of brown to one part of green. So you are right in saying we need some more brown in there. You can use sticks and dead. Now as you're cleaning up your gardens, you might find that there's debris there. You could throw that in there. That would be considered brown. It's all dead. And certainly if you want to take, maybe people want to bring a bag of leaves every year and mix that in there too. And you could do that all summer long. So you could keep doing that. Just keep turning it. Take turns turning it, have a couple big forks out there and have people turn it, and that will really help to break it down quickly.
Julie, two big ambitious project questions here. So Annie says, my ambitious project, I want to landscape my backyard to make it friendly for kids. We're starting from a blank lawn.
Ooh.
What are your suggestions? Yeah.
Where do we
start? Lots of possibility.
I think with kids, one thing because of time is I think raised beds that are kid level, maybe 2 foot tall, are great because it really will cut down on your weeding. And you can get in those garden beds really early in the season. They warm up quickly. You can do, as the one caller or person on tweeted out, was you could put in early season crops that take the cool weather, like radishes and kale and lettuces. And you could start those right away. With seeds, you can also mix in some transplants, like maybe some strawberry plants or something. I'm thinking of our kids' garden, our Goldie's garden that's on campus. We've got sections with trellising for pole beans. We also trellis up things like small watermelons. And that's kind of cool to see those melons hanging there.
Great.
They're kind of neat.
Yeah.
And kids will start to eat more food when they've actually seen them grow.
Great.
They'll get excited about them. So,
did you say you trellis watermelons?
Trellis the small ones. The vine will actually just trellis right up there.
Really?
And then you want to do some kind of support for the melon. So we might take an old nylon stocking. And you wrap it around the small melon, then tie it to the trellis, and then the melon will just grow in the stocking. It's kind of cool.
Excellent.
You can make a little sling out of it, too. But I think it's cool to see it grow inside the... It actually will protect it, too, a little bit from insects. So.
I know. That's good. Okay, here's the other one. Here's the big ambitious project. Suzanne says, I've owned a half-acre property with lots of garden beds. So she already has raised beds, I guess,
sure,
for 5 years, filled with perennials. I barely take care of it. And now there's invasive grass. Do I have to dig up everything and start over?
I wonder what the invasive grass is.
Would that matter?
That'd be the first question.
Would it? Okay.
So,
why?
Well, I think you always want to identify your pest, whether it's a plant or an insect or a disease. And depending on what it is, if it's an annual grass, then you have you want to maybe use pre-emergent. Once you get rid of it, if it's a perennial, then you probably want to be, you may have to dig up sections of your garden and renovate it and weed it out of there and then replant it again.
So when you say renovate it, you mean take off the layer of grass.
Right. Take it out and take out the
new
plants.
Dirt and all that stuff.
Well, I don't know if you have to do that necessarily, but there you may find you want to take out the plants you want to keep and then get in there and either kill off the offensive plant or also dig it up too and work on that. So it's a big job to renovate a garden, but you might find that you actually have a better looking garden in the end.
Yeah. So when you're digging up a lot of grass, like a lot of space with grass in it, are you bringing in some machine that you can rent or how do you do that?
Well, it depends on what it is. If it's actual lawn grass that's moved in, then you can usually edge it and then rip it out.
Okay.
Use a sod cutter. But if it's an invasive grass, like a weedy grass or grassy weed, then you have, I don't think you can take a machine. You'd have to hand hoe it out of there and really clean it out. It's just a labor of love.
There's
not
an,
yeah, it's a lot of work. And sometimes those grasses or those weeds will come in on plants that you've purchased. So it's important to take a really good look at plants that you buy and make sure they're not bringing in Creeping Charlie.
I've had that happen.
Yeah, it happened. I was just looking at a plant the other day and it was a bunch of Creeping Charlie in it. It's like, well, what's this doing here? This is a peony.
call here from Tim in South Minneapolis. Hi, Tim.
Hi.
Hey.
Hello.
I was calling in. I live in South Minneapolis, you know, Lake Street, and real close to the Mississippi River Gorge.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'm too cheap to buy a soil test kit, but can you see in this area here if we have more alkali soil than acidic? And part of the reason is I was putting in some of those Twist and Shout hydrangeas.
Sure.
So that really affects the color. And I did amend the soil with, you know, a couple different things. One of them was iron, you know, and there was another one there, you know, and the other one.
Hey, Tim, right, we have a lot of people waiting. So you're saying, how do you find out what the pH value is of the soil without getting a kit?
And I know it's a test kit, but I was asking the speaker if she knew, you know, this area here.
Okay. Got it.
Chances are it's alkaline soil because it is in the metro area and we have a limestone bedrock beneath us. So I'm going to say I'm pretty sure that it's going to be alkaline. It's going to be a higher pH. You would want to fertilize those Twist and Shout with an acid-loving fertilizer for acid-loving plants like Muracid. And read the instructions, follow them. More is not necessarily better. Just follow the instructions, and that will help to modify your pH somewhat and hopefully the color of your plants.
We've got somebody on Twitter who's being invaded by snow on the mountain. How to get rid of it?
Pesticide.
Really?
Herbicide. Well, it's hard. It's a great ground cover for a tough site, but unless you want to get in there and dig it out by hand, and you might have other plants that you want to keep, and it was like the caller with the grass issue or the person who submitted that question, you have to get in and do the work.
Dig it out by hand.
You got to dig it out if you don't want to spray it. Yeah, if you don't want to spray it.
I don't like to use the pesticides, but what that means? I've got a lot of weeds.
Right.
So I live with it.
Right. And weeds are not necessarily, but some things that we think are weeds are not so bad for our pollinator friends.
Exactly. I mean, I've said this before, we let the dandelions thrive in our yard because the bees like to come hang out there.
Yeah. And you know, That's important, and they provide some nutrition for the early season bees. So not saying you should let your yard go.
I know,
but
my husband envies everybody else's yard. Yeah. It's very beautiful and smooth. And I'm like, but we have the bees, and they don't.
Yeah.
Okay, to John in Maple Grove. Hi, John. Thanks for waiting.
Hello. I've got a question for Julie.
Sure.
It is an insect question, and I think I know what it is, but the last 2 or 3 years in my yard, I've been bitten the ankles and up the pants and even under the underwear, believe it or not, and it's a bite that is, if you start to itch it, you want to tear your skin off. And
wow. Sounds
awful. I think
it's
no-see-ums.
Okay.
And I don't know where they're coming from. And I'd like to know how to find them and how to get rid of them.
Yeah, like, is there something there that's attracting them or something?
Sure.
Yeah.
That is a great question for, actually, for our entomology department. And Jeff Hahn is our extension entomologist. You can find his contact information on our extension site. I would ask him about that. I would hope that maybe you've had a dermatologist look at the bites and they could maybe tell you what it is. Or at least give you a couple of options. It probably is a no-see-um or could be a chigger.
That's why the itchy.
Yeah.
Right.
So you might want to contact the entomology department or look that up on the insect page on our garden site.
Is there something he'd have in his yard, Julie, that would be attracting chiggers?
Yeah, I'm not really sure about that. That's a question maybe for them. That's painful. I apologize. I'm really sorry for you on that.
Hey, when should we do the fruit gardening show? When in June? I mean, are we kind of in our prime?
June. Yeah, okay. I would want to bring along Emily Teppe on that one. She's one of our research fellows. That'd be great.
Okay, good. So we'll talk fruit gardening the next time we hear from Julie in June. Great to have you here.
Thanks a lot.
This was a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. to add your voice to our discussion, you can call in at 800-242-2828 or tweet Carrie at KERRIMPR. And if you miss us live, you'll find all of our shows by subscribing to this podcast. If you have questions, you can email us at talk@npr.org.